Welcome to The Offseason. I'm your host, Dr. Cokes. The Offseason is an exploration of athletic health, recovery, and performance told through stories of athletes and their medical and training team. Now for a quick but mandatory medical disclaimer. This podcast is for general information purposes only and does not constitute the practice of naturopathic medicine or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. No patient-doctor relationship is formed. Use of this material is at user's own risk. Listeners should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any conditions they may have and should seek assistance from their trusted healthcare professional for any condition. This podcast does not speak on behalf of naturopathic medicine and does not represent the views of the profession as a whole.
Hey everyone, back with another episode of The Offseason. So yes, these are few and far between lately. So many projects on the go. This is still one of my passions. So I'm going to try to get out an episode monthly. And I hope you guys still, you know, enjoy all of the content that you're getting from this. So today I have on Brian McKenzie, who is an absolute innovator in human performance and stress adaptation. This guy is so great in terms of integrating respiratory movement, strength, conditioning and endurance-based training to his approach. I loved this conversation. It made me sit back and think on a daily basis how I treat patients and what I'm providing as, you know, keys to success instead of, you know, always looking for a supplement intervention. What could lifestyle modifiers be? What could we start to bring attention to that would really be a game changer in the performance spectrum for a lot of people? So I hope you pull as much from this episode as I did. I thoroughly enjoyed talking to Brian, and he's just an absolute wealth of information. Check it out. Brian, thank you so much for hanging out with me on The Offseason.
Nicole, I should say Doc Cokes. I appreciate what you're doing, how you're doing it, and I've been following you for a bit for whatever time I do spend on social media, and so honor is mine.
That's so awesome to hear, because yeah, every time I look at your content, I'm just like, is he in my brain? Is this it, all of the things that I'm thinking about? It seems like there's a post about it or something along the lines that I've had a conversation with a patient in practice about. And it's so cool to see like the higher ups speaking about these things. And I know you've been doing this for a really, really long time, but one of my first curiosities is like, what's pre-breathwork Brian versus post-breathwork Brian? What is the evolution for you?
The similarities are that there has been a curiosity since I was as old as I can remember, you know, and from what my parents tell me before that, I was still curious. So curiosity has, nobody's been able to break that of me, although they tried, and they will continue to try if I allow them to take my attention.
I bet.
Yeah. Well, it's just, unfortunately, it's the downfall of being human. I think, you know, our attention is finite, but you know, our creativity is not. And I think I discovered art pretty early on. So that's kind of the common theme, which is where I arrived with what I originally got into human performance with, which was really a foundation in movement. I chose the mentorship route. I chose to stop going to school. In fact, I actually purposefully dropped out of high school the moment water polo was over, and then ended up going to a local college to get my my diploma before my classmates graduated, moved on into a job, and began my, I guess you could call it maybe the 9-year program of college where I danced in and out, in and out, in and out. And then I discovered exercise science and kinesiology, and then found myself becoming kind of the go-to for answering questions there. And when I wanted more than what it was offering. And I found that really in a number of different people, but namely a guy by the name of Nicholas Romanoff, who created what was called the pose method of running, but he was basically a genius around movement. And so I fell under kind of that arm with a number of other folks. I had a background in strength and conditioning. So the beginning of my career became very focused on movement, and then it transcended into skill development and intensity. And I kind of flipped the endurance world on its head fairly early on in my career with taking a very different approach to endurance training than traditional training. But I, the pre-breathing Brian was a guy who was trying to do it all and was compensating everywhere as a result of that. Granted, I was curious. However, I was burning myself to, down to the ground, but I was being encouraged to do so as it's kind of the norm. I've traveled the world teaching. I've owned several gyms or facilities in that early stage of things. Fortunately for me, I figured out through trial and error, mostly error, that running gyms was not my thing, but teaching and learning was. And that was where the creative side of what I was doing came into play. Most of my job involves R&D, which is still happening today. So that's that creative side. However, once I became curious about what breathing was doing, everything about my behavior began to slowly change in a very different direction. And I became more aware.
I love it. That's it. And I think like all of these conversations that I have so frequently about breath work is like meeting people where they're at and then what that transformation could look like. And I am by no means an expert in breath work. And my initial conversations is like, hey, I can see like you're using all of the accessory muscles in your neck to like have this conversation and you've sighed like 50 times. Maybe it would be a good idea to like start thinking about some of these things. And I think when we look at the pros like yourself, there's this like notion that it's always inherently been within you, or there's some sort of maybe secret that you have that others don't. And I think it's really like this dedicated practice over time, I would imagine. So when you say like burning the candle at, you know, all ends and just, you know, spinning your wheels on a day-to-day, like what did that look like for you? And where did those pressures come from?
I think cultural's idea of success was definitely a part of what it was I was doing, meaning I was trying to make money. It's something I believe I loved. I believe that I loved. However, that gets very convoluted very quickly when the money or the success of that trumps that creative side of it or love of it. And you don't need to try and love anything. And that's one of the things that I've really figured out, right? And, you know, to be clear, I don't actually even consider myself an expert in anything. I don't consider myself a pro in anything. I am very aware that I understand some things at a level that most people don't. That doesn't make me the expert. That just makes me curious. And I don't want to lose sight of that ever again. That doesn't mean you can't make money, but I became very focused on doing things in order to get more people to see this. Or I remember my first book and that whole, like it took two and a half years to actually get that thing out. And the drive for that was more people. And then like, oh, well, how much money will I make off of that? And, you know, and it's like, oh, and then when those things aren't happening, you start to see, I didn't see those things. I didn't understand what was happening then. Now what I understand that as is an attachment. And when those attachments actually become more important than the actual love of what it is you're doing, you're going to have problems. And I had problems. I had some real serious ones. And those ended up showing up physiologically as well. Like I could go around all that. However, you know, it was like, you know, I'd wake up in the morning and I've always been an early riser because like I said, I played water polo and I swam for a very long time since I was like 4 and a half with swimming and then 12 on for water polo. But that said, that means I had to get up early in the morning and go to practice in the pool. And that's what that sort of those sports demand. So I've always been an early riser. So I would get up early. I would actually either train or I'd have an early client. And the moment I had a break, I'd be training. From there, it was getting highly focused on what it was I had to do with the businesses or whatever. And then when I was going to travel, which became almost every weekend. Like I would fly out on a Friday and I would come home on a Sunday night or a Monday morning. And then I would repeat effort. And this meant like there were times I would fly to Copenhagen, Denmark, and I would do it in a weekend. Like I would fly out on a Thursday and I would be home on a Monday.
That's wild.
Yeah, I remember vividly doing that and then trying to trying to stay on top of that in order to facilitate everything that was going on. And this was to nobody's fault but mine of just wanting to achieve, not realizing that I was slowly eroding what it was that actually got me into what it was I was doing. So my days would end with me so tired, but over time, that tired became wired tired. And so sleep became an issue at one point, right? Then once the breathing thing entered the space, like became a part of this, all of a sudden things started to really change. And that wired tired thing started to dissipate. And it wasn't just breathing my way into this. It was me actually recognizing the attachments and then the behavior patterns that I was actually implementing. But I was literally trying to do it all, which is, you know, the life of a professional athlete, more or less, you know, in season, right? And, you know, it's a, you know, especially if you look in like hockey or baseball, like the, you know, even American football, these are, and even football, soccer in Europe, it's a very on thing. And it's just an expectation with, you know, you're getting on flights at odd times and landing at odd times and then being on at odd times. And, you know, it's like, how do I combat? It's like, yeah, how do you combat that? and that's the life I led for a very long time, working through problems for others. And the road to hell is paved with very good intentions every yes. single time. And I wound up in my own little hell. And I openly accepted the consequences or circumstances of that. And I was very open. Fortunately, I was very open when I became aware of it to that I didn't need to just change everything. I knew most things were going to be changing radically. I knew the moment I got involved with what it was I was doing, how radical a change that was about to happen in my life. And it was already starting to do that with the people that were coming in and going out of my life.
So huge change ups through it. And as you had said, you're right. Like this is the exact life of, you know, human performance, I would say. And definitely, right? All of the conversations that I have are kind of like exactly this with people all of the time. And I just describe like a summary of what you said as like bigger, stronger, faster. Everyone is seeking out this bigger, stronger, faster, right? And society has all of these pressures to do so as well. So when most people sit in front of me or when we have these conversations, the little pieces of knowledge that I pick up on is like how we start to shift this headspace when everything has been preconditioned to be this way for you. And how is this actually working for you? Are we starting to lose sight of these things that, as you had said, are the core to what you actually believe and trying to get after? All of these entrepreneurs are seeking out, yeah, the bigger, stronger, faster rat race of more. And how do you in practice or when you're talking to people start to like even peel back that first layer of onion to say like, maybe this is not working for you, even though you believe grinding is the answer?
Yeah, I mean, this has really been the importance of the work that I've done with Emily Hightower, who's one of my business partners, who she's really my counterpart to a lot of this stuff. But we launched a program called Shift Health, which really was the impetus of this question, meaning like how do I come to or when an individual comes to me, what is it I'm asking? Like, how am I getting them to this point of understanding? Right.
Yeah.
And that's fairly simple. I ask them what they want. And then it's like, what do you value? And let's really look at that. You know, there's a very famous Warren Buffett question, I believe, that happened with one of his pilots. And the guy asked him about his success, whatever. And he said, I'll tell you what, go write down the top 25 things you value. And and really spend time with this. We're not in a rush. Like, go spend like a couple weeks and get back to me once you've got that list of 25, but make sure you do this. You prioritize that 25. And although I go about this differently and I don't order these things necessarily like this, I actually just use like the first couple things as a prioritization. When his pilot came back to him, he had prioritized everything and had a list of 25. He followed directions because he wanted to know what Warren Buffett's secret was. And it's not a secret. It was literally, hey, so what I want you to do is draw a line after the top five. And here's the deal. Anything below five, you stay away from like it's the plague. Because that shit is just sexy enough to deter you from the most important things in your life. And what I show people is I introduce them to themselves based on what it is they give me an answer to in terms of what they value or what they want. And I show them through stress, whether that's physical stress or mental, because I can take them into a mental state as well, where the disconnection is between their mind and their physiology. And how they're actually they've developed attachment problems, whether that is a chemical or like, as we see with chronic exercisers, right? Like all the stuff you understand so intimately, and or whether this is just this mental thing, which is usually a part of the same process that somebody's involved in. I get them to see the reality of their decisions versus like, oh, their attention is being drawn away from something that is kind, that is attractive enough to deter them from their actual goals, which is exactly what I explained to you what was happening with me. And so my work really involves me actually going through a process and coming out on the other end of that to be able to convey that message or show or guide people into that response. I just so happen to have 25 years of experience in strength and conditioning and human performance as a result of that. But the larger view of what it is I do is I actually introduce either the professional athlete or the CEO or the housewife or the mom or whatever it is who's contracting me to come in to themselves, and we develop a program that allows them to understand that on a daily basis so that they actually reinforce the values that they actually believe they want or stand for.
I think that's so powerful. And I think, you know, throughout all of the interactions that I've been so fortunate to have with people is it really is an unlearning and then a relearning of how you're interacting with the society who's kind of like shaping you and conforming you to be one specific way. And I think, as you had said, with the multitude of people, everyone is in this reality of how it should, how it could, but you introducing them to themselves and their actual wants, and then kind of guiding them is so influential. With this guide, do you feel like it's very individual of like, can you just jump right in with some people and they'll do exactly what you say? Or is there a lot of unlearning to be done? Or what's your experience been like?
Yeah, it's usually a lot of unpacking, which is also, you know, it's like I have a mandatory one month like intro. It's not, you can't just come in for a session, you know, it's just too much. There's a lot of unpacking. It's usually, I mean, the bottom line is it's usually just starting to remove some of the constraints and then all of a sudden changes start to happen, you know, and unfortunately far too many people fall into this breathing thing as they believe that that becomes the answer to it. And, you know, it's like, no, this is just part of the equation of what we're dealing with. And breathing is just that fundamental thing that'll make us aware of where the dysfunction is really quickly. And what you brought up, especially about when you're talking to somebody and you can see that their accessory muscles are turned on, is, and this is culturally where we're at, is it's like we have the vast majority of people at this point that I've come in contact with, including people who have been lifelong exercisers or fitness people, are doing what's called blood, are what's occurring is blood stealing. And blood stealing is when blood is being diverted towards those primary respiratory muscles versus where it should be going, and those accessory muscles coming on in a state of non-work output demand, is a very good sign that this is happening very early on. And we probably have some much bigger problems going on underneath the hood, from cardiovascular disease to whatever you want to call it, like whatever metabolic disorder is going on, it's showing up in that breathing. Mm-hmm. And it's not a cure-all. It's just an entry point to go, oh, hey, let's really, if we can get you to start introducing some proper breathing to slow you down, we're going to get a hold of the physiology that's actually making, that's probably dysfunctional. And the easiest way to understand that is really, like, you look at somebody who's unfit or doesn't exercise at all, and they're anaerobic, or they're very stressed very quickly, meaning heart rate goes up quick. We're utilizing much more glycogen than normal than somebody who would be fit, right? Like, so you start to see those markers start to dissipate because aerobic efficiency starts to take place. And really, the easiest way to get a hold of that is to actually give somebody some parameters on their breathing.
Yeah, that's fascinating. For, like, talking to people in these individual states, like, is it fascinating when you start to see, like, these light bulb moments and things start to click, and they then radically, like, get better so much faster from there? It feels like there's so much resistance at the start, and then something just, like, shifts at times. Appropriate name for your company, I would say.
Yeah, right. Yes. I mean, that's the whole point of what it is I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Is for the individual to actually figure this out. Mm-hmm. And so when the light bulb goes on, I've done my job. It's not me telling them what they should be doing. It's, what's the connection here? How can you see this connection? Can you see that when I'm asking you to rest between sets here, you're distracting yourself by grabbing your phone versus actually recovering? Mm-hmm. And it's usually that takes some time to start with, to actually introduce, mm-hmm. but it really is, you know, I mean, I got a guy who the other day really tried to explain to me how his phone and Instagram being on it while we're supposed to be training is actually not stressful at all to him. And I'm like, I don't know that you understand how chemistry works and the visual system.
Like, yeah. Or so, before bed, I get that all the time. They're like, oh, it doesn't bother me right before bed, like scrolling Instagram. That's like my time. And I'm like, okay, well, let's just try this and see how it goes, right? Just always like bartering, I feel. If you try this and let me know how it goes in a week, and if it's not good for you, we'll switch it up. We'll try something else.
I mean, look, I am as guilty of this as anybody. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't sit on the Instagram or my phone before bed at all. In fact, my phone shuts off around 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. I shut it off. That said, I do love entertainment and shows. And it's either they're too intense of a show, or I've been watching shows for too long of a period of time at night, mm-hmm. my sleep starts to suffer major. And then I'll go back to reading books, and I'm instantly like, boom, out, boom, out, boom, out. Right. And in our house, it's like, we have people trip out when they come here because, like, at night we don't actually have real lights that go on. We have red lights and things like that. And they're like, what the fuck's going on? And I'm like, light pollution's a real thing. Trust me, you know? And I unfortunately I've seen the differences. So that's why we do it.
Oh, it's so funny too. Like, I don't know, for whatever reason, maybe it's new moms or a lot of women in general that I speak to are like obsessed with crime scenes and like crime docs. And like right before bed, they're already not sleeping because the baby keeps them up all night. And I'm like, let's just make one shift where you don't listen to horrific crime scene things right before you go to sleep. And people are like, wow, it actually helps. I was like, you don't say. And I'm right there too. Like, I have so many bad habits that I'm just conscious of and trying to shift and trying to break. But I totally understand how difficult it is. And I think a lot of what we see or feel, or if I could kind of, I don't know, resonate with a lot of people, it'd be like a dissociation, right? I'm tired from the day. I'm tired from work. I'm tired from parenting. And you... we're seeking, I think, some sort of growth or some sort of change, but it's easier to leave your world for a second. And then I'm always thinking in the back of my brain, like, why do you live a life that you're trying to leave for a period of time? You know what I mean?
Very good question. And I think you nailed it right there in terms of, or alluded to this, is that when at the end of the day, if we have this feeling of, I just want to dissociate, or I just want to drop out, by turning off, by watching a show, by having a drink, or whatever it is I'm doing, that is quite literally the body trying to communicate with our overthinking minds, mm-hmm. which have tried to ignore the signs. Like I just talked about this yesterday, because we posted this paper on panic attacks happening and the signs of these things happening about an hour before a panic attack occurs, right? Mm-hmm. And how that, just because you don't have panic attacks, this still applies to you. This is that thing I'm talking about, is that our bodies have been communicating to us to process or come down for some time, but we've been ignoring that. And for whatever reasons, maybe you do have a child and it's the child's constantly got you on. And it's this whole idea of shutting down or checking out. Mm-hmm. That is that sign that I have missed something. Mm-hmm. And therein lies the opportunity to become more aware of what it is I am ignoring.
I am 100% it, I would say. And I'm always curious to, like, the best suggestions to help people start. So when I mentioned breath work, whether it be a professional athlete sitting in front of me or mm-hmm. a new mom or whomever, it's like a foreign concept, and you're trying to, like, explain it and trying to give them some sort of applicable analogy where they can kind of get what you're talking about and why there's an importance there. And there's so many, like, tools, and what you had just said made me think of, like, all of these wearable technologies and everything trying to, like, override and tell you how you're supposed to feel. There's so much social media, like with women's cycles, of telling you how you're supposed to feel. And I think, like, trying to tune into you and just starting the process, like, what are some of your suggestions there?
The first is that we walking away from judgment, or trying to understand judgment. We think we have a lot of needs, and we actually don't have any real needs. We really don't. And I will argue this thoroughly, because I've sat with it and I've used that language, needs, like, oh, I have this need to fit in, or need to want, you know, this thing. No, those are desires. And, you know, I don't need to do anything. I don't need to eat. I don't need to go to the bathroom. I don't need to do any of that. However, there will be circumstances or consequences as a result of that. We are quite literally living in a time where we don't like the circumstances of our choices. And so we use the term needs in order to deflect that, as if I didn't have a choice. Right. And so this then puts this whole thing on me. Unfortunately, society and I have participated in this whole torturing of self or suffering, meaning I'm not good enough. I need to improve. And Alan Watts talks brilliantly about this. You know, the problem with improvement is, who is going to improve me? Well, the one who needs improving. The improver improves, is trying to improve what needs to be improved. Mm-hmm. Right there, we have a cyclical problem, an insanity that exists within us. And so really taking people away from the judgment of themselves, like, hey, what I really just need you to do is just start to be aware of some of the little things you're doing without judgment. And we all know what those little things are. All the little habits and things that we like to do. For me, and one of the bigger things I did that I challenged myself with was, like, my driving. Since I live in Southern California and I have most of my life, driving is a very big thing. So I challenged my driving for just driving the speed limit. And I find that I don't like driving the speed limit. I drive like to drive a lot faster than the speed limit. And I try and get to where I want to go before I'm there, which is quite literally just the whole game that we're playing in and of itself anyways. We're not present with where we're at in the experience we're having, trying to get to the experience we want to have, right? Mm-hmm. At any rate, my driving became one of those little metaphors for my life as like what was going on. And so I just became more aware of that without judgment. So I just quite literally pay attention to things like, oh, I grab my phone while I'm driving and I'm like, what do you want to be doing right now? And I'm like, oh, I want to be driving. And so I put my phone down without going, oh, you idiot. Don't do that. Right. And it doesn't matter what little thing is going on. It's like that language of you idiot. And so this actually goes back to the language we have. And so I just pay attention to people's language when they first see me, and words like better, improve, I want to win, is successful. What does that mean? Define that for me. All of these things start to, I should have, I need, when those things start to show up, I start to introduce people to that language, and then to catch themselves in that language without judging that side of things, you know, and this is a big thing, especially within human performance, especially elite athletics. I mean, how many elite or professional athletes have you run into whose lives have been determined by winning?
Yes. 90% of them, probably.
Correct. And we're under the impression that we can't be elite, professional, or great without that at the top. Mm-hmm. And there couldn't be a bigger lie occurring.
So wild. And it's so true. It's pervasive outside of athletic performance. But I think too, oftentimes when I bring awareness or maybe some attention to that thought, you're often met with like, well, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with striving to be the best? And everything that you just said is very evident of potentially why it's this vicious cycle that you're never going to break free of, or it's, yeah, again, maybe just spinning your wheels would be a good example of what's going on, hey?
Well, it's what's killing Michael Jordan right now, quite literally. Like, it's what kills many, many professional athletes. Mm-hmm. It's why you'll see an NFLer who retires and within the next few years is a type 2 diabetic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that, you gave up you for an external motive, but had, and it couldn't have been any other way in the first place. However, with the communication that we're working towards right now here or wherever, we're working towards getting people to understand that that's not the truth. Mm-hmm. And they know that. However, because of the dysfunction and the trauma that they're holding on to, they're unable to see that right now. And so they don't want to believe that is the truth, that if they actually were listening to themselves and what their actual true, like what they valued and what they wanted, they could still be that. We don't know what that potential looks like, meaning it's infinite.
Yeah.
What is not infinite is the mind. Mm-hmm. The mind is finite, separate from the body.
Definitely. And I think too, with that thought process, I think the fear is like, what if I completely change? Or, you know, I've had NHL athletes sitting in front of me being like, well, if I was at my true nature, if I really spoke to it, like, what if it's that I don't want to play professional hockey or I don't want to play my sport? And I'm like, what if it is? Like, what if you're supposed to be doing something
amazing?
Else? Yeah.
What if you actually went and did what you wanted to do? Mm-hmm. Like I did. I stopped playing baseball as a kid because I hated that sport. Mm-hmm. It was boring. Didn't move fast enough. I couldn't be aggressive enough. Like, hey, I'm out. Right. Like, And I don't regret any of it. I don't need to be a professional baseball player. I've worked with a few baseball players, some really great ones. And I'm like, dude, this is awesome. If this is what you really want to be doing, mm-hmm. look at you thrive. It's amazing. Get after it. But if that's not what you want to be doing, whoo, like, aren't you in an identity crisis?
Yeah, it's tough. It's like suppression all day, every day. Like you're living your truest self. And I can imagine that manifests, or I see it daily manifest into dis-ease or dysfunction or chronic illness. And I truly think that that's the root of a lot of things. I listened in like a little bit of preparation for this to Barbell Shrugged episode with Dan and Anders, and you had like this, you had this really cool comment where they were asking like how so many people were doing breathwork stuff online. And you said breathwork routine, it's like constantly seeking relief, I think, versus finding resilience. So like that one of, or like piecemealing these things. Tell me your headspace towards that.
I mean, the reason I stayed away from the breathwork space was because of how yoga has communicated it, or the yoga community, I should say, yoga in its true form is pretty much perfect. But that's not what's really being kind of taught. Most of what's occurring in the breath space is simply about relief or changing how I feel. And relief is a necessary point. However, we all should be able to use a tool to provide some relief. But if I continually am using a tool to provide me relief every day, that's a drug. That's medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Resilience. What we've learned from the freediving community is that a lot of motherfuckers can hold their breath for a lot longer than I can. So they're doing something, and they are some of the least stressed individuals I have seen. And in me working with the waterman culture of big wave surfing and some free diving, or, you know, the spearfishing world, et cetera, but in particular pro surfing. But I've spent a lot of time with a lot of big wave surfers, guys who are some of the most calm individuals ever when there's no surf. And then when you start to see swells, or they start to see things happening up in Alaska in terms of hurricane, et cetera, all of a sudden wheels start to spin and the anxiety starts to run and it's like the wheels come off. But nonetheless, they have developed a side of things that you just don't see really with a lot of other people. So you see this resiliency side that they're developing with. And this is just an analogy to be used that, you know, we could be learning from this community. And that was what I started to gain from that was, oh, these guys or gals are literally teaching themselves how to stay calm in some of the most stressful states that are going to occur to them, meaning being held down or going into a pit of darkness and not knowing if you're coming back from that. Right. And that's some people's worst nightmares. And that's a very good indication that we aren't addressing some of the things that are going on. However, what you start to see inside of even the health community at large is that people are just simply trying to change how they feel. Mm-hmm. And that's what relief is about, is I'm just wanting to change how I feel because I don't like where I'm at. Well, why? How did you get there?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want. How did I get there?
Mm-hmm.
I want to go and understand that. And so if I can slow things down enough, meaning if I could take if I took a breathing protocol that I learned to slow myself down with, I could then start to maybe do quote unquote some math or some backtracking and go, what did I do here? What did I do there? Was it that person saying something? Was it this that happened, or what was going on? Where did my behavior begin to shift, or when did this change? Because reactivity, and this is what I was talking about with that panic thing, mm-hmm. is that the signs and symptoms for panic are showing up well before the panic happens. That means before I'm reacting, there was a lot of things that were happening, that were occurring, because most of us aren't in front of a car crash that's happening or a bear walking into the room. And those would be perfectly natural responses to a reaction and doing something about it. However, we don't live in that state. We're living in a constant state of overthinking. And so yes. I'm becoming overreactive to things. And it's like, well, let me backtrack. And how did I get there? Oh, I did this. I never took a break. I wasn't taking any breaks here. What if I slowed down more in order to absorb what was going on with each experience I'm having? And it just so happens that when you start to look at research and, you know, things around like ultradian cycles, you're like, oh, like there is like this whole huge like compensation, super compensation wave that occurs throughout our day when we're paying attention to, I'm absorbing myself in some deep work or in a conversation like we're having, and then coming off of that and actually not going into the next thing. Mm-hmm. And when you look at a professional athlete, it's like, oh, okay, so you just had a game or practice. And what did we do immediately following that? Oh, you showered, you cleaned up, then you went to interviews. Mm-hmm. And then you had to get to the airport to get on a plane, and then you flew. And it's like, yo, like, what were our protocols in and around those situations in order to kind of bring you down a little bit more to absorb what was going on? And some people are really great at doing that. But there's without a doubt a way to use breathing to understand what is working for me and what is not. How is my sleep occurring? Because my sleep's more about the 16 hours I'm awake, right? Like, and so what am I doing throughout that day? How am I digesting food? What foods am I eating? What am I choosing? You know, why do I continually want to eat sugar at night? Like, like, so it's just, you know, all of these things that I don't have any one answer for all of this stuff, but what I do have are some tools to get people to start to use things and then allow them to see, am I using this tool as a way to escape? Or am I, and this is the big problem that I saw with inside the breath space, is that most of what's going on in the breath space right now is people just want to escape. Mm-hmm. And it's also why I stay pretty clear of it. I'm just not interested in that. And people are, by all means, we've been trying to escape since we became aware, I'm not here to rain on your parade. Go parade away. However, if you want to come to me, I'm going to show you what's going on as a result of that. Meaning I'm going to actually introduce you to who you are, which is unlimited potential.
It's so interesting you say that, because this is what, like, initially starting out in practice years ago, I just found like, oh, you have, I don't know, like acid reflux. Here's your supplements for acid reflux. Oh, you have whatever condition. Here's your supplements for this condition. And then when I really thought about the reason why I didn't go to conventional medical school was like, because there's just a pill for everything. And then I was like, hold up. I'm just doing the exact same thing on the natural front, right? This one size. And even when you are speaking to some of your initial comments there, like, this is just one piece of a puzzle. And there's definitely some supplements that might help a little bit with the cortisol response or help with sleep and stuff. But again, as you had said, exactly like breath work, these are just small pieces of a very large thing. And we have to change so many larger things, but this might give you the peace of mind or the ability to even start to consider that, right?
Yeah. And I 100% agree with you. Like, we have a lot of tools for treatment. Mm-hmm. To be clear, I'm helping treat somebody or give them a tool in order to treat so that they can become aware of getting back to understanding who and what they are, which we don't know what we're capable of. Mm-hmm. Biology, like, to be clear, no technology can do what this can. I am, you know, without getting too woo-woo or out into the space, I am actually just the interpretation of everything that's going on and really in this experience. And so my potential for growth, for all of that, the only way that gets dismantled is through death and or my confusion. And I am so in tune with that at this point, meaning we can do things. We think that lifting weights or running fast or doing what we're doing like has limitations. And we don't know what those limitations are quite yet. Mm-hmm. We still don't know what those limitations are. We're just so focused on the outcomes, the way we've been looking at them, meaning winning a race, like, or a competition, mm-hmm. that we don't know what that potential is, meaning how that transcends through a life and gives me the ability to create or do whatever it is I want.
Yeah, it's kind of freaky. Like, it's a bit overwhelming when you stop to think about it all. And I think one of my greatest experiences was, you know, giving birth and then using breath was crazy to be able to not like scream. The second you screamed or felt like you were getting out of control or the pain was too high, you lose it. It's really hard to get it back. So that really brought me to this like application of breathing, and then the whole transition. Like, I am kind of, as you had described yourself initially, like business minded, growth, trying to like put all these puzzle pieces together to be excellent at what I do. But having a kid just really brought me back to like, man, my favorite days are like Mondays when I just like watch him play in the grass and we like, you know, lay there and look up and just start breathing. And I'm like, wait a second, is this what I want to do? Is this, or at least part of what I want to do? You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. But like, it's so funny because we get so obsessed with what we deeply care about that we go beyond what it was we cared about.
Yeah, totally. That's a really, really great way to put it.
I watch kids, man. Like, I watch my nephews, I watch kids, and it is pure genius. And I also watch as parents and people strip that from them, mm-hmm. and attempt to strip that from them. And I watched as this was attempted with me, but thank God I connected with what it was that I connected with in terms of like, I mean, I grew up in the 70s and 80s when punk rock was just like climaxing. And I understood it to the core, not to the degree that it was like, treat people like shit. Mm-hmm. It was like, no, you're not going to take away what drives my learning. And sticking me in a classroom and trying to confine me to this particular way of doing this, I don't care what you're doing. I'm going to go my path, and I will go to enough of this to maintain my ability to play a game that I enjoy playing. Mm-hmm. And that's about it. And then when it's over, I'm out. And I can really look back at this and be like, oh, wow, I really did do that. Like, I really did not let them stop me from keeping that creative side of things. And so today, I still play like a kid. And I watch so many adults, people that come to me who've lost that. Mm-hmm. And so I just am like, let's develop a practice. Well, what does that mean? Well, some of this is going to be like, hey, I need to pay attention to what I'm learning about, yeah. and what I'm doing, my behavior. But the other part of this is let go. Total self-abandon. Like, total. And that's what love is. And that's what vulnerability really is. And it's like, give it up and go do, like, so what if you're not supposed to be a professional hockey player?
It's okay. It's going to be
fine.
That's
why I'm here. Because I'm going to tell you yes. But if you do believe this is what you're supposed to be doing, I'm also the guy that's going to tell you yes. Get after it. Yeah. Like, dude, let's do this. I can show you where you're deficient in many things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all don't let anybody in a contract dilute that. And yeah, those are important things. Like, they're practical things. They're a part of the process. However, let's not allow them to get in the way of what you really value. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. When we think about like you having these conversations so frequently with individuals, and I think one thing that comes to mind, or one thing that I experience quite often, would be something along the lines of like everything in the performance world has something to do with like max effort, redlining, just like destroying yourself. And then when I really think about physiology, there has to be some sort of balance between that. And I don't even know if balance is the right word. I think it's more like the ebb and flow of sympathetic and parasympathetic. But what is your take on this? Mm-hmm. And do we have to destroy ourselves continually?
So it's a bit of a paradox because for me, because I mean, I literally, I think my books, two of my books are sitting here, which are basically on high, like literally high intensity work. Mm-hmm. I do believe high intensity work has its place. Mm-hmm. However, you do not need to train max effort. It's not necessarily a trainable thing. Mm-hmm. Because, and it's like I was talking about with like the sedentary individual. They are maxed out very quickly, getting off the couch, right? Get going and doing something, or overthink the woman or man who's dealing with chronic anxiety that won't allow them to leave the house. They already are training. They're already stimulating that. The anaerobic side of things isn't really that trainable. However, the integration of energy systems is, and we continue. I'm glad we're continually learning. However, the traditional model of bioenergetics has kind of been ripped apart, the conventional method. And now there's this more modern idea of it where it all works together. And that we've always kind of understood that, we just didn't want to admit it. So we kind of bifurcated or trifurcated it, meaning like you've got your phosphagen, you've got your glycolytic, and you've got your oxidative system, right? Well, no, it all works together. Meaning, yes. the phosphagen is fed through the glycolytic, which is fed through the oxidative system, and it's all working at once. And the tissue's never even really anaerobic; it can't be. It's an impossibility. It would die. And it's connected up with the brain, which means the entire system's connected up. The brain can't go without oxygen or it starts to die. Like, it's just like, and there's restrictors on that, the whole system. So we look at this, it's like, how do I actually get somebody to want to understand that in basic form? And going for a walk is what most people need to do. Mm-hmm. And if you can do that with your mouth shut every day, pretty much, you should be doing that. From there, it's like, well, what do you want to do? And how do we get there? Well, where's your fitness? And what does that look like? If you're hitting, like, if I'm having you do, like, I've had endurance athletes who couldn't do 400 meter repeats that were lifelong endurance athletes because they just didn't have that gearing to do that. They never had done the intensity work to do that. But that doesn't mean they're not anaerobic. It's just their systems don't work in a way that allow them to function at high level. So they couldn't recover from high intensity like that. And then you've got on the other side of this, you've got like strength or power athletes, right? Who could not. And we've all seen, if you've looked at the powerlifting community, we've all seen very unhealthy individuals. Mm-hmm. It's a very hard thing to overtrain in the strength or power community, unless, of course, you're tacking in volume. And so the easiest thing to do with these athletes or the strength or power community is simply have them walk and shut their mouths. And you've got somebody who's now integrating how this whole system can function together because they're already at this upper edge of stuff. The easiest way to understand all of this is really just through assessment with people, what I do, which is actually just gathering an understanding of how well they function with stress. Mm-hmm. And without asking them questions, that's simply having them do an exhale assessment, which is on our website for free. Secondarily, it's me just taking them through a basic, typical aerobic assessment. Like, I'd put them on an assault bike and just have them start real easy. And every minute or two, I'm having that intensity go up. And when that deflection point occurs where they can no longer breathe through their nose, or they are hyperventilating through their nose. Like, I know that we've reached a limit of where we need to be for that moment. And so there lies where we start with training. Mm-hmm. And so the high intensity thing comes in only when they can show that they can actually breathe at a fairly intense level with the primary breathing muscles, really the only ones online. It's when that starts to deflect that we start to see where that drop off occurs. And that's a very short period of time. And so that becomes more or less this earned place that we can work from. And I can get there pretty quickly with people. Look, I could have somebody doing thrusters or deadlifts fairly consistently and heavy quickly. Mm-hmm. But it's the moment we start to see that cliff dive with the pulmonary system is where the changes, meaning I am either holding my breath in a stress response, or I'm right. Like I'm over breathing. This becomes that very, that indicative space of understanding where intensity has met its match. And this is why you'll see professional athletes who can handle a couple or a few times a week of some pretty high intensity without dropping out. Right. It's what I know when I can handle this stuff, because I know where the changes are happening through my system. I can feel it. Like I can feel like I could be on my bike, around 300 or 400 watts. And if I'm mouth breathing in that state, I can feel changes start to happen, like stress in the tissue start to happen, versus if I'm breathing through my nose at 250 to 300 something watts, that's not occurring. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, all right, I'm on limited time here. I'm not as on much limited time here, right? That's a very kind of, I did a deep dive on that, but intensity is something that really becomes earned or has to be seen through a very good lens. Unfortunately, the lens we've been using, heart rate, is a terrible, terrible lens to be looking at in that terms. It's just the tachometer, right?
Yeah.
Like HRV is an incredibly important thing, but why would I be watching HRV when you're training?
Right? Not a helpful tool at that
not
time.
Exactly a very helpful tool, right? And what I'm starting to see is like, you know, I mean, if I've got the anxiety person, like you were talking about earlier, it's like, yeah, dude, like I'm kind of noticing you're using, you know, your secondary muscles here while we're just having a conversation. Like I can tell you right now, that person is going to be falling apart very quickly inside of a stressful situation that I can create in the gym. And they don't need to go there. That's not the goal. The goal is to actually get them doing high functional work without having to do that. And that's very possible, but we've got to create an atmosphere for that individual that works like that. And this is where the individualization occurs inside of programming. I really work hard with that with inside the structure of what it is we do for membership for training. But really, it does become an individual process of paying attention, which is what I actually I give parameters like inside of membership training, where it's like you have 3 to 5 minutes, or it's a 30-second maximal effort. However, if you've been mouth breathing for more than 10 seconds, that should have ended, because I know what that means in general sense. Like you're way over the limit, and we're only doing that so often.
Yeah. I think like there's so many things that you just said that are so important for people to hear, and hopefully they're really hearing. And if not, maybe replay what you had just said if you're listening to this. Something along the lines of like, there's no breaking apart of these interworkings of systems. Just like I see so much on social media about like hormones and talking just about cortisol or just about estrogen or just about progesterone. And this system is in an entirety. Yeah. It is working. And just like you go into your, you know, doctor's office and you have one problem, like you can only get one conversation for 5 minutes about this one problem, but it's an entirety of a system that has to be addressed. And I think exercise is a really great way to highlight that. Also, when you're talking about the earning of intensity, this is so, so important and such an interesting concept, I think, for a lot of people to hear and then maybe start to put into practice on a daily basis. So many, let's call it like overtrained athletes or burned out moms or whatever terminology you want to use. And I know terminology is so touchy these days, and you can, you know, rip somebody completely apart by just maybe using the wrong words, which I hate, and we could probably get into in its own beast of a conversation. But I think this whole concept of everyone having to do max effort and, like, you know, getting your body back after having a baby or, you know, crushing it all season long, we miss a massive opportunity to do, again, really resonate with the internal workings, really start to listen to our body and what it's asking for, or what it needs at that time. And as you had said, like the opportunity on the other side of things, when we really start to hone into these interworkings of the body and how we're actually feeling, are astronomical. Like, there's so much opportunity for, I'm not even call it max potential. I'm not really sure the word to call it, but like limitlessness or something like that. Hey.
Yeah. 100%. You explained that perfectly. I mean, it really is. When we separate our mind from our body, there is no win. Mm-hmm. There's only dis-ease. Mm-hmm. There's only dis-ease. That doesn't mean that there isn't some practical things we could be doing with thinking, in terms of like deep thought, etc. Not in the slightest. Deep thought should involve what you are feeling. Mm-hmm. Like, does this feel good? Does this path I'm headed down or thinking about something feel good to me? Or am I forcing this because of an external motive, because mom and dad want me to go to college and get straight A's, yeah, right? Like, and then what's the pattern of that after I get out of college, because I did that? And how long does that transfer down until I'm 50, 60, 70 years old, and I'm still trying to make up for that whole and it's like, yo, man, like what, like we there's a process. We're missing the process of this. And you're touching on the hormones thing. And it's like, I'm instantly thinking of probably a dozen messages I have in my DMs of guys who are in their 30s and even 20s who are on TRT. And they're like, look, I'm just on a little T by my doc. You know, da 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 da. And I'm just trying to, I want to understand this breathing thing and how I can integrate it. And I'm like, well, just so we're clear, your nervous system's shot. Mm-hmm. Well, how do you know that? Well, because you're on, how is it a 20 or, unless of course you're the anomaly, which I have no, I have no business talking about you. However, from what I've seen and who I've worked with, I have enough data to understand, including myself, you burnt yourself out. And now your body's low on T because you burnt yourself out, and you're trying to cover that up at this point, or your doc is covering that up, and they're not honestly looking at what's going on with you. And like, what you need is to start paying attention so that you can get your T levels back up to where it would make sense, mm-hmm, right? But your T levels are nothing more than a manifestation of what you've done to yourself. Mm-hmm. And until you claim responsibility for that, you're going to play this vicious game of, oh, well, I'll never be coming off of T because I've been on it for so long now. It's like, sorry.
The system can only handle so much and manage so much when we're putting all of these external influences on it. And again, not knocking T, not knocking hormonal birth control. No. All of these things have their place, but it's really like, yes, what were we trying to do there? Like, there's just so many, I don't know, underlying things that I feel like we miss the boat so much. And like, these amazing podcasters and these amazing people in the industry are explaining like, this supplement will help raise this and this will do this. But like, if we brought it back to the very foundation, like if you're just doing your job to get the, you know, pension at the end of the day, that's the actual problem, right? And until we address some of those things, the motivating factors of why you're doing what you're doing, I could give you supplements till the cows come home. I could recommend breathing till whatever, but it's so challenging to sit in practice and sit across from somebody and be like, this is what has to change. And they never want to change those things because A, it's terrifying. B, there's a monetary stress or something like that, or the life they're so deep in, it just feels impossible for them to come out of.
Comfort and convenience, man. They trump it. I mean, and that's what society's built is, you know, that was what civilization did, is it provided a comfort and convenience to not have to go be the prey, right? And it's refreshing. Like, it was very easy for me to say yes to be here because I've observed enough to understand that you're not a part of the noise. And what I mean by that is I know a lot of people, and I observe enough out there, especially with these higher level podcasts and information portals, where the road to hell is being paved with good intentions, meaning people who really cared, who cared at one point, are now caught up in a game of trying to improve people by giving them so much information, there's no way to absorb it. And so week after week after week, there's a new show trying to funnel out information to them that they should go fix something or do this thing, because they're beholden to money and sponsors in order to maintain the lifestyle that they've now become accustomed to, meaning you are now a part of the exact problem that you are trying to solve. Mm-hmm. And I don't want this. I don't want to be a part of that. I have an aversion to the internet, a very healthy one. To social media, I have an aversion. I don't engage in a whole lot. I don't share my private life at all. I don't know people. I don't want to share with them what I'm doing in my mm-hmm. private life because I don't know them. Mm-hmm. I have pruned because of what it was I grew up in and became somewhat like I got a little popular within a world that I existed in. And it became apparent to me that I didn't understand my own boundaries and started sharing more than I actually wanted to. Mm-hmm. And so I took a step back from that and now understand those boundaries. And in that process, I understand who it is I want to engage with and who it is I do not want to engage with. Mm-hmm. And it's refreshing to have people such as yourself who obviously care as much as you do about how you're helping people, that you're really living a very authentic life. And I hope that the people hope is really a terrible word. And I'm sorry I used it, but you know, I really do appreciate what you're doing, and my goal here is really to just kind of put people in front of the things and the lessons that I've really come to understand as what the truth is telling me, what it's taught me, and where I'm headed with it. And you know, I people who follow me know that that's exactly what's going to come out of me. If people are listening to this, I'm sure they're getting some of that here, and that's appreciated from you.
And I mean, that's the most greatest thing to hear, that is your perception of me. And I would say with 100% honesty and vulnerability that it is a very fine line to not get wrapped up in that, or kind of, as you had said at the initial part of the conversation, of like how getting wrapped up in those things or, looking for financial gains and all that sort of stuff really deter you from your purpose or what you're trying to actually do or get after. So in all honesty, it is a difficult thing. It is a struggle all of the time, but I think, having the guiding light, like people like you who are willing to have these open and honest conversations, are such like a foundational strength for me to like, okay, keep doing it. You're doing the right thing. Just like keep moving forward, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, but yeah, it's so pervasive. I could go log in to my social media account right now, and in my DMs there will be the hidden ones or whatever they are. Mm-hmm. There will probably be somewhere between 5 and 20 telling me I could be earning more money and by promoting whatever it is, whatever, with whatever. And I got to tell you, in the early stages of my career being in social media, I was like, yes to all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And now I don't even look at them. I delete all. Mm-hmm. And I've created a habit of knowing what I stand for. I truly do know what I stand for, and I don't need money in order to change that. Mm-hmm. I can earn money very well. I know how to do that, and I will never let it dictate I can't say never, but for right now, I will not let it dictate what it is I'm in pursuit of. And that's just the truth. So, mm-hmm. That doesn't mean I can't earn money,
yeah.
Right? And it can't be a part of the game, because it is. Right? Like, I get paid well for what it is I do. Mm-hmm. No doubt about that. Mm-hmm. However, it's not going to be driving everything else.
Yeah. It's not why you're doing all of this.
No, I'm not. I am not beholden to feeling accepted on the internet or social media anymore. Mm-hmm. I do that within the confines of a very small group of people. Mm-hmm. And namely myself, which, mm-hmm. I remember not being able to be like struggling to be alone. Hard.
Yeah.
Struggling.
And I know that feeling.
Yeah. And now I prefer it.
Yeah, definitely. It's such an evolution. And I think, you know, even throughout this podcast, when you had mentioned a few different times of this resounding theme of people not feeling good enough or not enough, not doing enough, I think all of this plays into, you know, limiting what we could actually do here. And so I think, like, yeah, you speaking to this is so influential. And I hope everyone is following the things that you're doing. And I hope, you know, you keep wanting to and keep sharing all of the things that you are into, because I think it's revolutionarily just getting back to those foundations of what we need for, like, society to move in any sort of direction that's going to be probably beneficial or helpful too, right?
Yeah. Well, thank you. That's appreciated. You know, I mean, we provide tools, like you and I both provide tools. You're providing more in the medical space and in this space where, you're very educated to do so. I'm doing it in this space over here with, like, you know, strength and conditioning and human movement and breathing, et cetera, whatever. We are providing people with tools to get them back to the tool. Mm-hmm. And there is only one real tool, and that is awareness. And awareness is what this moment is. And that's what's important. That is truly the thing that's going to give you your experience back versus trying to think of the experience I needed to have or want to have.
Totally. I love that. What about, like, I could talk to you all day, so I'll not take up too much more of your time.
No, I carved out time. Go for it.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking, like, what's next for you? So you're involvement in a few different companies and doing some pretty cool things, but, like, what is on the horizon next? What's coming down the line for you?
I don't know. I don't care. I'm just I'm really just doing these things as they come. I work through them, you know, like, it's so funny. It's like, you know, there are times where I will just be annihilating books on physiology or whatever it is. I'm, you know, just trying and absorbing things. Then there are times where it's like, I won't even touch a book for months because I'm out in that garage and I'm like, got all like four different types of technology on me to confirm what it is or see where it is. I felt like I was going and what's happening under the hood, and then understanding the delays or the issues within that. And, you know, oh, this is doing that. And it's just, it's all up in the air. It really is. But I ultimately think that this is, you know, really just me learning to communicate in a way that's allowing more people to kind of understand where, how to get back to what we really truly want. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that that will ever stop. And I mean, look, I get paid largely to screw around and then talk about that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there is a better job than that, because I enjoy talking about, obviously, because I talk, I've talked on this, but
it's great.
I enjoy talking and I enjoy getting paid for that. I enjoy working with people and seeing light bulbs go on. Mm-hmm. And I've participated in enough in terms of like the health space and even like things like, I mean, I was involved heavily in like recovery space for people. And I've seen all of these aspects of things, and I've seen the dysfunction that's existed in all of them, and I've seen the greatness that's existed within all of them. And I'm not trying to improve any of it. I'm just trying. What I'm doing is just being creative within it. Mm-hmm. And really just exposing more of what it is I've learned in a way that I think we've allowed an educational system to destroy.
Yep. And different ways of communicating and different, like what hits with each individual. Like you could do 20 posts on the exact same thing, but it's going to hit with someone differently, you know, every time you say it. So I think that's super powerful to bring the creativity always to these things. And you're right, it might be the same tool that everybody's talking about, but if you say it in some sort of way that hits home with, you know, that pro athlete, that's all that matters. And that's the biggest difference for all of this. And I think even in my experience, like there's a million podcasts. Why would you take the effort to do one? And it's conversations like this where you're like, I don't know, maybe it'll hit with someone, or
yes,
some guy stopped me in like the liquor store one time. Yeah. And he's like, I love your podcast. Yeah. I was like, what? Okay, great. Yeah. So it just keeps the drive.
Awesome.
It keeps going. Yeah.
It's yes. Hilarious. Yeah. And you never know. I mean, look, there are plenty of athletes I go and all that they think that we're going to connect and we just don't. Yeah. And they don't get much out of what I'm doing. And then there's guys like John Jones, who like I just spent a lot of time with, like intimately in applying this stuff in a very short period of time for what could have been a very long period of time. But things that clicked so well that the guy just dropped in and was like, I don't even know how to explain this to you, but why do I feel like I'm getting better as every one of these guys is getting worse? And I'm like, because you're paying attention and you're getting it. This is your moment. This is, and have that. And I mean, I'm talking about a guy that's in the fight world, right? But it's like, he's arguably the greatest fighter that's ever happened. Mm-hmm. And we knew what was going to happen with that fight. Even though, you know, there could be things that happen in a fight where somebody gets clipped or something happens. Yep. And it just, you know, it changes. But everybody being on edge and going into that and just, you know, him walking out and doing what he did in seconds. And it's like, dude, like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what the work's about. It's like, oh, I'm capable of that. Now, that's not just all my work. It's I mean, in me seeing his process was something that allowed me. So me coming into a camp with a fighter like that or an athlete like that, I get to see what everybody's doing. Mm-hmm. And the team that he had assembled and the people and the way they did it was so mind-blowing to me. Like it was like almost like there was no corner, there was no stone left unturned. And that allowed me to insert what it was I could for him to make sense of it in a very short period of time. And he was open and ready for that.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and that was it. So, and I'm just using that as an example because not everybody's ready for that. And that's just where it is.
Yeah. That's so interesting that you say that too. And yeah, you run into practice all the time. Like you start talking about these concepts and it's like, oh, whoa, I can't get there yet. So, you know, sometimes meeting people while they're at, or as you had said, like not everyone jives with working with me as a practitioner too. So I'm sure you run into that as well. For like what you're doing and what this looks like. So of course, I would recommend everyone like book a one-on-one with you. And obviously you don't have time or capacity to do all of that, but how would somebody like start this process if they are a little bit interested and they're like, okay, what? And I know individuality is huge here and it's almost a disservice for you to say like a task list, but like, what are some things that we should start thinking about?
There's the breath assessment is on, it's on shift. So shiftadapt.com/breathwork. There's a breath assessment and they can get a real good understanding of how they're managing stress through that, whether that be a sensitivity to CO2 or whether their nervous system is off. Either or your exhale test is going to be affected by that. The system as a whole is affected by carbon dioxide, meaning the nervous system will make adjustments to CO2 and vice versa. But CO2 being this kind of the stress molecule, it allows you to kind of start to get a grip on like where you're at with stress, but it also aligns you with certain protocols that you can work towards getting a longer exhale assessment with to see how you're building resilience, right? To see how you like, if it goes down, to see how that affects you, right? And then vice versa. From there, it's like we offer membership for like $30 a month where people can actually go in and actually start to apply this in a training schematic in strength and conditioning and or some endurance work or even some body movement work with Emily that applies this stuff. You know, there's a lot of avenues people can go with that, including like some like courses or webinar stuff that we offer inside the membership to members to learn more about this stuff. And from there, it then becomes either signing up for one of our courses like Shift Health, Art of Breath, Skill of Stress, or then hiring me as an individual from there. And this is where it's like, you know, making sure that you really are ready for some serious change, because I will require that in order to work with me. It's not going to be like, hey, we could just sign up for a couple of sessions and see ya. I'm just at a point where I don't want to play that game anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a beautiful point to be at. Know your audience and know, you know, that people have to do the work, that at the end of the day, there's still work to be done and it has to. Yeah. It has to come with that willingness.
And a lot of people are doing that work. Mm-hmm. There are professional athletes who are dotting I's and crossing T's, but mm-hmm. they believe they're ready for that next level of, oh, I feel like I want to integrate more of this stuff he's talking about. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's where that next level starts to happen.
Definitely. I love it. Well, thank you so much for all of your time. And I think usually I end these with like one note to athletes or in their off season, like what kind of stuff, and you probably just mentioned a few of them, but what kind of stuff should they be thinking about in whatever their off season looks like? It just comes to mind right now, like hockey, if we're transitioning into a time where you get to potentially recover, is it all the same things? Like start with the CO2 tolerance test, see what your actual capacity is, or is there any like...
I would actually start there, yes. And then here's an easy play. Like this is what I'll do with every athlete that goes into off season, whether it's after a fight or it's off season, like a hockey player, baseball player, or football player, right? We pretty quickly within the next like couple weeks, we start building that aerobic foundation through going on walks, mm-hmm. mouth shut, and starting some mild endurance work in gear one and gear two. And we mm-hmm. have a gear system that we've developed, and it's actually pinned to my Instagram, the gear system. They can go look at that and they can see how that works, but quite literally staying below gear two. So gear two max, but mostly gear one work for the next 4 weeks minimum. Mm. And they can do whatever they want in that gearing, whatever, because we'll know exactly what's happening. They're not going to be in gear one by going, right? Yeah. They will quite literally be, you know, it's a real way of learning how to start to integrate the foundation of movement mm-hmm. and physiology, and then allowing the mind to become more calm as we are actually engaging in this effort mm-hmm. to really start to understand that connection that we have with movement.
I love stress. That. So all trainers listening, yeah, you don't get them back and just get them on the Aerodyne as fast as possible as soon as they're home. No. Where can people find you? Where can they access you?
Shiftadapt.com. They can reach out through there. Obviously, Instagram. They can I somewhat engage in DMs. It just depends. I'm not going to answer real quick. Like I get a lot of like high level questions from people. I'm like, yeah, that's a consult, my friend. Mm. but yeah, it's unfortunate being in the spaces that you and I are in, because we've become a byproduct of, you know, answering questions to things that people really, that really we take the time to help people solve, which mm-hmm. is what we do for a living. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately I have to draw lines at this point. And mm-hmm. so it really is, they could reach out that way. The easiest way to reach out is through shiftadapt.com and you know, look for a consult or send their question that way. And I can see if it's something that's, you know, we can engage in.
Well, I'm so thankful that you responded to my DMs, and I'm so fortunate that I got your time for today.
This is, we have, there's things to talk about. And I mean, look, I'm not like, if somebody has a deep, serious question about something, look, that's work. However, if you see what I'm doing and enjoy what I'm doing and you have some thought about that, send it. Like, I'm interested, or tag me in it. And if I have time to look at that and I enjoy what I see, guess what? I repost it.
Awesome. That's so good. And I honestly can't wait to see all the communications that we have next. And again, thank you so much for your time. I know you're doing a lot of stuff, but your headspace is cool. And I'm very fortunate to be able to pick your brain a little bit.
Thank you. Well, the feeling is mutual, Nicole. Feeling is mutual.
Awesome. We'll talk soon, man.
So that wraps another episode of The Off-Season. Thank you guys so much for listening. We always appreciate that. If you'd like to follow along with us, it's at theoffseason.podcast. We always appreciate a rate and good review and share. The whole point of sharing this information and doing these episodes is to educate as much as possible. So if you think somebody else would really learn something here, we would really appreciate that share.